Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I am joined in the podcast studio by the one and only Mr. Danny Ward.
Hello everyone.
There we go. Hello, welcome to the show. Hello Danny, how are you doing?
I'm really fine, thank you. Really fine.
Really fine, thanks. Yeah. I think this might be the first time, other than producer Joel, we've had the guest in the studio with us.
Yeah.
And I feel like I don't think we can do like an intro and then intro the guest because I feel a bit awkward that with our guests just sitting there. So I think we're intro him straight away. How do you feel about that, Danny?
I feel that's great.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, Mr. Dan Fardell.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Oh, round of applause. It's like big breakfast. Like,
yeah. Or it's Steve Wright in the morning.
Oh, I like it. I wish to do more of that. Yeah. That's great.
Also, the music's not quite off. I quite like it, but yeah.
Can you hear it?
That's
then?
Kind of thrown me because I'm not used to applause.
No.
Dan, you're a man of culture.
Yeah.
Do you recognise that piece of music?
No.
No.
Do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh. I think it's just generic, isn't it?
Oh, well, I mean, it has to have been written at some point.
Oh, I'm a big fan of generic. It's one of my favourites.
Yeah. Oh, and we're off.
So, okay. So Dan, let's just get into when I invited you onto the podcast.
Yeah.
You listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
And that wasn't convincing. No, you must have, because you commented on a joke.
Yeah.
Did you...
I mean, it was on Facebook that I commented.
Oh, so you didn't comment from the podcast?
No.
We haven't mentioned this joke on the podcast. Okay, well, I reckon let's get straight in with this joke chat. We've got lots of joke chat to get through today. We'll talk to Dan about that, and then we'll do the regular feature that we've prepared for, and then we'll crack on with other joke chat.
Cool.
So the joke you commented on was the baseball joke.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't even remember how I worded it. It was someone told me they like MLB, and I was like, yeah, I love Spice Girls. Or something like that. No, or did I say baseball in the start of the joke?
Well, it came from when we were doing the commentary on DIY Pundits,
that's
BT
it.
Sport.
Yeah.
So it was something along the lines of, I said, next up, MLB. And you went, oh, I love baseball.
Yeah, and then...
I love the Spice Girls. Yeah. And I went, no, Mark, it's Major League Baseball.
Then we had to... So we had to say baseball in the... I had to say baseball in the setup for the joke when I put it out on Facebook. So that would have been my friend... What was it? I can't even remember.
I think it was like, my friend told me he's really into baseball. He said, I love MLB. And I'm like, yeah, I love the Spice Girls too.
Yeah.
I think that was it. Like,
yeah, but then surely the baseball's a bit too early in that to... Oh, I wish... So basically, I would look it up, but my phone's currently recording our guest. So I can't actually see what it is.
Stop giving away the secrets,
Mark. Is this good content? So Dan, so you commented...
That should be your new catchphrase.
What's that?
Is this good content?
Is this good content? What was your comment on it?
I had a joke that I only tried once, and I do have, like... I'm not good at keeping faith with a joke that doesn't work. So I tried one joke one time, and it was just... At the last Spice Girls reunion, there was a terrible melee between Mel B and Mel C.
Yes.
And I think you were confused because I think the word melee is written like it should be pronounced melee. It's a French word. And
oh, this is it. So,
yeah.
So in, that's it. So in your head, was it melee? Mel E?
No, it's melee. Because,
yeah, pronunciation.
Because it's
written,
to be spoken rather than written.
Yeah, but you wrote it.
Yeah,
and
I wrote it down, because I couldn't drop a voice note on your Facebook post. Yeah.
More's
the pity.
That's yeah. That's
melee like, is melee is yes. spelled M-E-L-E-E.
Yeah. So that, yeah. like I say, that's the problem with it being written.
Unless,
yeah.
unless of course you know to see it written down how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I wouldn't have. I mean, I don't really put out written jokes. For
so,
people,
so how like, did you actually? So is that how you did the joke when you tried it?
Something like that. Yeah. I think I said the last Spice Girls reunion. There was a terrible melee between Mel B and Mel C.
See, I like that.
And some people say, well, the thing is, it got so, a lot of likes on your post.
Yes.
Most people appreciated it. But I think some people say that the A should be between the B and C because it's literally the melee is between them. But I think it's satisfying to have the A, B, C, as you say, the joke, the melee between Mel B and Mel C.
So you also got, yeah. Oh, okay.
I think it's definitely melee between Mel B and Mel C. Yeah. What's yeah. the other way? How would it work if you went B, A, C?
Well, I don't know. Someone suggested it and Mel I didn't B, even bother to try and do it.
Mel B There's and a... Mel C had a melee.
Yeah, but that's still not the Mel A being in the between B and C, is
but,
it?
But yeah. A isn't between B and C anyway. No. So is that an issue with the...
So maybe you could say Mel B Who had a this? Melee with Mel C.
Mel B had
there
a melee.
It is.
So are we saying... So hang on, so there's so much going on here. So are we saying there's another Mel
yeah.
in the Spice Girls?
Well, sort not, no, not yeah, another Spice yeah. Girl, potentially. It's just a person.
It's just the sound, yeah. It's not another Spice Girl, it's another Mel... But it's not really. It's just it sounds like it.
Yeah. So how did you go into the joke again?
I just said at the last Spice Girls reunion, there was a terrible melee between Mel B and Mel C.
Yeah. So would you set that up with maybe there's a bit of tension?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Set up the fact that there's a fight.
Just get people emotionally invested in the joke.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I
yeah,
think so.
Yeah.
So, and also that is something believable, isn't it? Or even the last, maybe before... Because that's why they broke up, right?
Oh, yeah, they didn't get together for so long because...
There was a melee between Mel B and Mel C.
Yeah, that works, actually. I might try that again.
But the trouble is, it is that thing of...
They had to cancel the last Spice Girls reunion because there was a melee between Mel B and Mel C.
But I never thought this would get this much attention.
No, but it's interesting because I don't think...
Welcome to the show.
I think the reason why it might not have worked live is because the wordplay bit is too early. Maybe
it might be, you know, it might
I
even
think you
be
can
one.
Admire it. It's one of those where you go, oh, that's brilliant, because that's it, does it make those connections? But I don't know if it's enough to make you go bang.
Yeah, no, that's I think what you've said is great, and I think that will help. But I you know what, there is quite a few jokes I write that don't even get to the audience stage. I'll tell them to another comic and they'll go no, and I'll just accept their word as
no,
final
you've
word.
Got any of those?
You can't do that,
because we could run through some of those.
Yeah.
Well, I've got one that I didn't try for ages, and then another comic said it was great, and a few, and then I tried it with every comic I'd said liked it, and it got a big success the first time. Second time, not so much. Very recent, actually.
Mm.
But it's not. Thing is, it's a bit gross for my usual standard. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah. So do you now. So do you find that that's maybe it's not the joke that's not hitting? It's the kind of
It's a bit blunt for me because I'm not really. I mean, I'll tell you the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just think of exactly how I worded it. It was yeah, we weren't very close as a family because my dad spent all his evenings and weekends in his lab. My mum hated that dog. And that's it. It's like, it gets big laughs from people who want that sort of laugh. And a couple of...
I think with a cheeky smile.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in his... She hated that dog. That makes it a bit more sordid.
Sinister.
But I think, I hated that lab, that dog. That's good.
It's a great joke.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I knew you the setup.
Yeah.
You said it's a bit dark.
Yeah.
So as soon as you said,
so you expect you braced
for
it.
I totally knew where the joke was going on a punch. But I don't think.
Oh, as if bestiality is dark nowadays.
I don't think I had a joke about bestiality. One of my first ever sets, I had a joke about. It's not a good joke, but it's like literally one of the first jokes I wrote was about my friends. No, something about. My friend wouldn't say kept saying no comment in court in his case of bestiality, and the lawyer was like, "Cat got your tongue," or something like that. It's all right, isn't it?
It's funny when you start out. Often you do go to the more rude and dirty and vulgar stuff straight away, don't you? You notice that quite a lot, don't you?
Oh, well, you got your bloody Pringles one. Is this the one you got to talk about?
He said,
funny.
My friend just said he just had anal sex with his girlfriend. I said, oh yeah, what was that like? He said, well, actually, he said it was like eating Pringles. I said, what? Once you pop, you can't stop. He said, no, I couldn't fit my fist down the pipe.
Oh yeah,
great.
I mean, that is worse than everything we've done so far.
But you start off that way, don't you, I think, before you become a bit more fan.
I did a gag in my first ever set that I've never done again, and the promoter said, oh, maybe save that one for stag do's, because it was in Brighton, and they're very nice and sweet and supportive.
Especially open mic gigs in Brighton.
Yeah, and then I came to this one, and everyone's like, oh, okay, they sort of winced. And it was just like, my granddad said, the problem with your generation is you think you invented sex. Well, I found his G-spot, the ungrateful old bastard, and I've never done that again. Because,
I like that.
I like that too.
Because
that's not my voice, really, that I found.
No, but you had that in with your
a question about
shagging
the
dog one.
You know the band about the lab. Is there any benefit in setting it up with? My dad was a scientist.
Well, the thing is, I think
he spent all the time in his lab.
Yeah.
Is it just because it's? Do you see what I mean?
I think it's. Hang on. So let's go back to you tried it with comics. They all liked it.
The lab one, yeah. And then I tried it just when I was, because I MC an open mic every Tuesday in Brighton.
Yeah.
And I just said, I never try my own material. I'm going to do one of my jokes here.
Yeah.
And I literally said, I'm going to do a joke now.
Okay.
And then I did it and it got a big laugh. But then there was like these younger people, maybe like 19, 20 in the front row. And one of them had to explain it to the other, these two like 19-year-old girls. And the look on her face, and I just said, I'm so sorry I put that in your head. I'm sorry about that.
That's what he said to the dog.
So
he put it in his mouth, Mark, not his head.
Head's in his mouth. Mouth's in his head.
I saw just this same discussion Come Dine With Me Couples.
Right.
Yeah, discussion about is your face your head?
Oh.
Is your face on your head? I mean, it's the honest yes, but anyway, sorry.
I don't think that matters young kids. If you explain the joke like that,
yeah,
of course it now seems too much, because they said
it was a beautiful thing until I explained it.
To explain it, you'd have to say he's shagging the dog, and by saying that, of course that's too much. But if you just a clever wordplay, then that's good as gold.
I just want to make it clear to anyone listening who's never seen me do comedy, which should be like 99.99%. That is not my usual style
of
joke either.
Don't make apologies. So, listen, these snowflakes, they're getting it their own way.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Nor do I, Mark.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I just don't... That's a kind of quite an abrupt turn from my usual way of relating to people. I don't have much... I don't even have much sexual stuff, let alone bestiality or incest.
There you go. So do you think...
more bestiality, more incest.
Do you think setting it up as a joke... Maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe it's set it up so that they're going, oh, this isn't him.
Well, I was going to ask you about this, actually, because I started out and I was very one-linery.
Mm.
And I found that I didn't... going longer, I realised that what I did was I started to sort of combine my one-liners into sort of little narratives or whatever, little sort of bits. But every now and then, I've got these one-liners that don't fit. So I normally start out with like half a dozen one-liners of like my highest quality, just to get the faith of the people in the room.
Yeah.
And then I kind of go into slightly more discursive things. But every now and then, if I slip back in to real jokey jokes, it like sometimes people love it and sometimes it's a thud.
Right. Like, so my thought there is that's a great way to start, because this is how I used to deal with comparing. Because when I'd compare, because I can just sort of chat and then go into one-liners, it's a bit sort of sudden and it's a bit disjointed. But I used to find someone, an older statesman comic told me, start with three or four jokes at the beginning.
Yeah.
Don't worry if they don't really land properly, but just get them in the head that you do that.
Yeah.
And then when you come back to it, it doesn't seem as weird. So that's definitely a good way of starting, I think.
Well I found that with MCing, because like, You have to go from crowd chat to a little bit of material before you bring acts on. Otherwise, it's unfair because they take the brunt of the transition.
Yes.
So
Danny likes that.
Often, when I MC, I can do it where I don't really get a drop in laughs. Like, I can go into the material, but not always. And sometimes when I switch the material and it goes, I might even make a comment like, okay, that was the first joke of the night. Didn't go so well, but this is what you're going to get. Or something, but I was a bit like, they didn't like the gags initially, but I've realised that's actually not a big problem. What I'm doing is I'm taking the brunt of the change of gear, and it's fine, because by the time the first act comes on, they're already into we're hearing jokes now.
Yeah, yeah.
Mode.
It's your job. It is the job to take the bullet and get everybody in that gear.
I basically, when I came back of lockdown, I'd realised for a long time before, I was in and out of comedy, and I wasn't putting... I got to the point where my 20 was had a sort of tight narrative, and I couldn't fit anything in. So I wasn't really getting new stuff working. So I kind of abandoned that with new material, and I did this whole narrative about my breakup with my long-term girlfriend that happened over lockdown. And now, when I've got about 8 to 10 of that, and it's a big chunk of like the end. It's basically the back end of my 20.
Yeah.
And when I transition into it, I was doing it via like, and this is something that's still not quite working. So maybe you can help me with it. Like a bit about lockdown, just a reference to it. And I say about has anyone achieved anything during lockdown? And I say I had 3 major life changes, right? And can I tell you the jokes? Is it silly to tell you? Okay. And these are very jokey. The first two. The first one is that I was commissioned by the BBC to write a sitcom. It's a historical sitcom about the life of Sigmund Freud. It's called You Ain't Half Hot Mum, right? And that usually gets... Obviously, it depends on the age in the room, and I do make a comment if people are younger and they don't get the reference, and I sort of joke about me being like too old to do comedy.
I really like that. That's great.
And then the next one is I also started a charity. We use the latest mindfulness techniques to help cannibals live a more fulfilled life. It's called Savor the Children. And again, that either gets a really big laugh or people go, like go away with your cheesy granddad jokes. And that's the thing. And then the third one is also...
That's not a cheesy...
People kind of go, this was someone who used to do comedy who I told the joke to because she asked about this joke. And she literally went, womp, womp.
Yeah.
And it was like...
But sometimes how many people were in that gig?
No, that was just a one-on-one conversation, it kind of robbed me of a bit of confidence.
Also, with that and with the Rule of Three thing, the second one never hits as well because you're doing this, essentially it's the same concept.
Well, sometimes I isolate those jokes. Like if I throw them into a bit at the beginning or if I'm just comparing and I just do one, then they'll work a bit better. But because it's like I'm talking about my life and then I do these clearly structured jokes.
What's the third one? Is it like a Rule of Three?
Well, the third one actually transitions into the breakup. And it's not really the same kind of thing. It's like what I say is that much like Debenhams, my relationship did not survive lockdown. And usually in the room you get a bit of and I say, no, I know it is. It's terribly sad because I really did love Debenhams. And that's it. And that usually works. And then into the breakup stuff.
I love that. But the thing is with that, that's a good transition. And that's not a cheesy joke.
That's the third one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You don't even need the first two.
Yeah, that's it.
In the build up.
But I was trying to shoehorn them in because I like them.
Yeah, but I feel like the first two are more in a jokey joke section rather than.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you set up those two by saying, talking about lockdown? Because what we've been sort of discussing, haven't we, that it does seem quite a long time ago now.
Yeah,
lockdown. Do you need to reference lockdown, or could you just?
The lockdown thing is very specific to the breakup because I say much like.
Yeah.
And the thing is, lockdown was quite a big part of the why we broke up.
You could just say much like
stuck in a one bed flat.
If you're worried about it's not a trigger word, but if you're worried about saying lockdown, everyone going lockdown.
Yeah,
you could just say it's like Debenhams, it hasn't survived or something, and then the trouble is, I really loved Debenhams.
Yeah,
it still
yeah.
does technically work. With that, I think in that sense, you can refer back to the lockdown.
100%.
It's a point in history now, isn't it?
Yeah. And I haven't got a lot of lockdown material. I'm not doing jokes about... I had this joke that I did a couple of times as we were coming out of lockdown that was just like, I never thought I'd see the day when I'd hear, you're not coming in my bank without a mask on, you know? And it's like, and that was it. But I knew that the lockdown bank... sanitizer mask material was going to have a very limited shelf life, so I never really bothered with it.
I think if you took go back to the three jokes you did there, if you take out the middle one, the first one's history related, right?
Yeah.
And then can you not sort of say about the lockdown being like a historical thing now, like it's technically there's something that will be looked back on as history?
I guess so, because I think what I've been using it as is a slight change of pace where I sort of ask the audience like, oh, did anyone achieve anything in lockdown? So then I can't make up these two ridiculously big achievements that I've had, and then I undermine them.
Yes.
I think that's my point there, is that bit there, did anyone do anything in lockdown, dates it.
Yes.
Do you need to say that before you do your two jokes? Because you could just say, oh, you know, I just turned 50 and that's a milestone for me. I want to...
Yeah, I don't talk about that.
And like him.
Okay. Or something, you know, another reason why you've done these things, not lockdown, which was means they happened 2 years ago. Do you see what I mean?
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I could just say, like, hey, lockdown. Big news, everyone.
Yes.
I've been commissioned by the BBC for that sitcom.
Yes. That. Yes.
And then that,
yes.
Brings, then that brings it into something that's happened last week, not 2 years ago.
Because what I used to do, actually, Stephen Grant helped me out with this. I used to have this device where it was actually with a previous relationship that broke down when I was going out with another comic.
Yeah, and that's always a mistake.
Well, no, but it went fine. In fact, we're doing a work in progress together next Brighton Fringe. Yeah.
There we go.
But when we split up, I was still doing the, oh, me and my girlfriend is going great stuff for a couple of months because, you know, it takes a while to catch up. And it was fine until one day we had a gig together. And not only that, it was a local Brighton gig. And it was another Brighton comic's birthday. So most of the audience in this little coffee shop was other Brighton comics. Aye. And I couldn't straight-facedly go on stage, say, oh, me and my girlfriend, we like this, we do that.
Of course.
So I invented this thing and I went on and said, in the interest of truth in comedy, there's a footnote to this next section. All relationship statuses contained within the following section were correct at the time of writing.
Yeah, right,
and that got a really big laugh. And then every bit I did... Because everyone in the room knew all about it. It was great, like, great. Like my ex is cracking up as much as anyone. And so then what I did, I realized that worked. So I tagged that on to the end of the section. It was like a reveal at the end of a longer set that we'd broken up. And it basically gave license to loads of these different callbacks. But because I'd written all this new stuff about a more current breakup, because I could still use it for any relationship. And even during when that other, the longer relationship, the later one, was going strong. I still ended the set with the, oh, we've broken up. And I'd refer back to material about my cats and stuff that I'd been doing. But what I discovered was I'd written all this new material about my actual recent breakup. And I'd been trying that out in like 10-minute new material sets. And that was kind of working. I got that sort of to the point of being solid. But then when I tagged it on with that kind of reveal, the first few gags, it took a while for them to come round. And Stephen Grant pointed out that basically I've lost their faith. They're not sure if I'm going to pull the rug out again from under. If I do it at the end of the set, it's a clever thing. Like, you know, certain people do reveals at the end of shows that are very clever. And it worked great. But then when I then have to carry on and they're not sure if I'm going to pull the rug out again.
Yeah.
So I basically lost that whole device. And now early on when I mention my ex, I say, oh, my ex this, my ex that. And I say, well, I'll talk a bit more about it later or something.
Yes.
So it's not like a big surprise, the breakup anymore. But the Debenhams is my intro now to the breakup.
But the breakup doesn't need to be a surprise, does it?
No, it's just a thing. I used to get great mileage out of the surprise.
Oh.
Because it was basically how I'd end my set. And then I would apologise and I would say, you know, it's difficult in comedy to keep the actual events, the events in your set, it's hard to keep them up to date with the actual events of your actual life.
Yes.
And then I would say, like, because I did all this stuff about how great my cat is, and I'd say, I mean, the fucking cat's been dead 5 years, you know, and that was like how nice. I basically much
yeah, that's funny.
End
yeah.
it. And
it's interesting that, like, when audience members know you, how, because with all my stuff, it's just all silly jokes.
Yeah,
Sometimes there's a little bit of truth in things. Like you say, when I wrote them, it could have been 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But even we did the gig in Leicester Square Theatre on Saturday.
Yeah.
And my sister-in-law afterwards... Because I've got a joke about having a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I'm quite convinced in saying, no, I have got a girlfriend.
Right.
And she said, yeah, we were all sort of thinking to ourselves, has he got a girlfriend? Like that. It's like, it takes them out of it, no matter who.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they actually are invested in your actual life.
Have you got any other bits and pieces?
Let me see what I've got here. I mean, I've got a few gags that, as I was saying, it's very hard for me to come up with material for this podcast. Because pretty much every joke I write smashes it first time and every time. But I've thought back to the mists of time to a couple of things I wasn't sure about. I've got one that, I come up with this joke that is so heavy on misdirection that I think people are lost by the time I get to the punchline. Plus, it's dated in the references.
Yeah.
So this joke is, what do you get if you cross Matt LeBlanc and Matt Letizia? Any guesses? No. Matt LeBlanc and Matt Letizia. What do you get if you cross Matt LeBlanc and Matt Letizia?
Blank tissue. Not today. Well, probably just say, I don't know.
I'll just say, two very powerful enemies, right?
Yeah, okay,
because you're thinking, is it to do with they're both called Matt? Is it they both got Frenchy names? Like, they're both 90s figures. Is it from the 90s? And then it's not even, you're not even crossing them together. You just individually upset both of them.
Yeah, I like that.
And
yeah.
it's such a... And
it's, ah, got it.
But it's a very sort of...
It's almost anti-comedy.
It's, yeah, it's kind of, it is anti-comedy. Yeah, so, yeah. And I quite like that. It's, I'd be quite, you know...
It takes a second to get it, doesn't
it? Yeah,
yeah. That's the thing. It takes too long. Like,
and it's almost like if that's your stick, it'll come across easier.
Yeah.
Like if you're coming on and you are that kind of... your thing is anti-comedy.
Yeah.
Like if Brian Gittins did that,
instantly
you'd be there, wouldn't you? But if you've done
edit this out and I'll sell it to him.
Yeah. If you've done lots of different, like really clever wordplay, they probably are just taken. Even though that should lead to them being more surprised, which is what you want.
That's it. I don't have enough. But I'd like have to change my whole set to build up. To
what
it
might be is if you've tried it at smaller open mic-y gigs, then if there's only, for example, 20 people in the room.
Yeah.
If majority of them take a long time to get it, then that is dead because it's too late to laugh. If you do that joke to 400 people.
Yeah, yeah.
What will happen is the people that are with it, even if it's only 50, will laugh to start with and then everyone will catch up. So it's sometimes you get jokes that won't work.
Oh yeah, they can.
Yeah.
Actually, that leads me to one of my jokes I've written down. I haven't done it for a while, but I had this joke. And Adam Bloom actually helped me set it up because in bigger rooms, it would always work. In fact, it would always work everywhere eventually.
Mm.
And I'll tell you about a time it didn't work at all, which is quite funny. But I had this joke that initially I used to assume that people that I'd already set up, the idea of me being a sort of a loner, sort of unpopular loner kind of thing. But Adam Bloom said I hadn't. So basically I had to, the point is I would say I was never good at making friends. So I used to try and find friends in online forums. And I even resorted to forums about things I didn't care about, like conspiracy theories. Like, I'm really not into them at all, except, obviously, the whole birthday card thing. And I'd look around and go, come on, people, you know the birthday card thing? I said, oh, come on, people, think about it. Birthday cards, right? We've all seen them. They're in every shop. But has anyone ever actually received one? And that would take a while. It was a slow burn. And then it would kind of really sort of spread around and get a lot... But they're probably, I hate to say it, but probably the thickest, great. It was either it was my delivery or I think it was 50-50.
But that's another thing. Like what Adam's saying is true in a sense. You really have to set that up, which is what I'm saying. Yeah, you're right. It's exactly the same as Brian Gittins, for example.
Yeah.
Straight away, that you'd be there with that, or Angelos. Or anyone, actually more Angelos, I think.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
But unless you are really setting yourself up as that loser.
The first joke I ever said on stage is so like brutally self-deprecating. I can't imagine that this was the first thing I ever said on stage was, I've just had some bad news from the doctor. Apparently pornography is fattening. And like, because I was a bigger guy then as well. And I was quite a mess, like a slob. And I was really like punching down on myself brutally.
Yeah, yeah.
With that first joke. So that was what I assumed people thought of me straight away.
Maybe that last joke would work, it would work as an opener.
Well, the birthday card one.
Yeah. If that's what you want to set up. If that's what you want to set up as a character,
I've got an opener that I've used for about 10 years and it's very concise, my opener. It's just like, did any of you ever do that thing as kids? You know, you take two empty tin cans and connect them with a piece of string. And at that point, you kind of look at someone and they're nodding and you go, and cry yourself to sleep. And that's it. That's my opener because it's like, it creates everything that I'm trying to say about like my sort of disposition or whatever.
So that other one would do that, I think.
It might be a bit lengthy. Maybe it could be a second
joke. The birthday card thing, you mean?
Yeah, do you think?
Is it lengthy?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think that's quite nice because because you do want to be punchy with your first joke, but you don't want to get there too quick. You do want them to acclimatise a little bit. So, and also, what's a nice way to start is by saying, even though, because you're using the audience, but you're not using them. You're saying, you know, the card thing, you guys. So it's like you are talking to them and it's not like you're just doing a script off the top. You're going, you know, that's that thing with the cards.
Yeah, I might revive that because I haven't done it for a long time. But that's one that would definitely fit into a longer show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see the time that it really didn't work at all. The only time it was a little gig on a little boat going out of Brighton Marina. So we're kind of totally captive on this tiny little boat. And always, it was even in front of like 10 people, someone would get it first and then people would start to get it. And I was like, has anyone ever actually received one?
Mm.
Silence. And I'm waiting, someone's going to start laughing. And then people start looking at each other and one goes, yeah, I've received birthday cards.
Oh,
and
God.
I was just like, oh, well, never mind. Let's move on to the next joke. Like, and it's so sort of weird because...
Before you sort of discard jokes, you have to take a real good look at where you've tried them.
Oh, no,
and
absolutely.
The situations, I think.
But this was 30 people on this little boat, and you think at least one of them is going to get this joke and laugh.
But the thing is, it's one of those things that, to me, if someone's bought tickets to a comedy show on a boat, that's not comedy savvy people. Let's go on a boat. That's a bit of comedy, and they're not expecting you
the boat trips.
To do anything clever.
Sell is the boat trip, isn't it?
Yeah, and the boat.
We did a gig on a boat once.
On a canal.
Do you remember? We're going back a decade.
That was one of our old agents.
Yeah.
She ran it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember that.
I do. But
I don't know how the gig went, but I mean, I'm fairly certain that people, you know, you're looking out the window, aren't you? It's an experience in itself that probably doesn't warrant any.
Yeah, well, it
comedy.
Was at night, to be fair, and they were going for other stuff as well.
Yeah.
But it was definitely like very beery, you know, and like one of the guys, the main guy, the first one who said, yeah, I've had birthday cards, he was a guy who was trying out being part of comedy and he tried to run a gig that was really horrible.
Should I tell you what I also think it is? It's that. Is a confidence thing
yeah.
the audience has in you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you didn't give off confidence, but I don't think that audience probably had a lot of confidence in anyone. Because
yeah.
they're probably thinking, this guy's doing a gig on a boat. Whereas that's in a comedy club where they've turned up, they're like, okay, these are all pro comics.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We're buying into it. But they probably go, if they're sort of half thinking, oh, is this going to be any good?
It was basically open micers on a boat.
Yeah, and then you're going, has anyone received birthday cards?
Yeah.
Very nice. They would go, what is this guy going on about?
Yeah,
like,
no, it was.
He's got
they
no trust
like,
in you. That's interesting.
This guy's
yeah.
a weirdo. You know, it's that sort of thing. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
What else have you got done?
Okay. I've got one. Oh, yeah. You know jokes, well, they're very... I've got a couple of bits now about stuff that comics like and the audience doesn't buy into because they're too... much about comedy. I've thought back of this because a couple of weeks ago I went to get my COVID jab and they upsold me to have my flu jab in the other arm and I was just really achy.
They upsold me
I've got no sales resistance, you know. I almost got tetanus as well because of the 3 for 2.
Polio is the one you want now. It's coming back.
Yeah, it's coming back. Where thanks to people having choices.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got to the club, the regular MC one that I do on a Tuesday, and I just said to a couple of the other comics about how I said I can barely get my right arm above my shoulder. So I said, so obviously I've had to cancel my rally, right?
Yeah.
And comics thought that was funny because they've got a darker, they're going to a darker
place
anyway.
Yeah.
So I tried that with the audience and like a few of them got it, but it was kind of a bit of blank stares going on with that gag. I don't come across like, I don't have a dark persona.
But that tells me that they don't get it because today that audience would go, ooh. Do you know what I mean?
They weren't upset. They just
didn't
get it.
That's my point. So maybe they...
Is there something else you could say instead of rally that's more innocuous or obvious?
Well, the thing is, though, my arm is all right now and I can go back to my hate crime, so it's all good.
I mean, what else can you, if you can't, what else can't you do if you can't lift, keep forgetting my film here. What else can't you do if you can't lift your arm up? You know, isn't necessarily attending a,
yeah, but that's not, that can only be funny if it's something meant extreme.
In the old days, maybe buying dirty books in the newsagent.
But I don't, but that's not, but that isn't,
dirty books.
But that isn't, that wouldn't be funny. I think the only reason it's funny is because it's so, so wrong.
So extreme, and yeah.
That's the only reason that's
it's so transgressive.
That could be funny, yeah. Because if you went, if you just said, my arm's a bit sore because I can't reach the porn anymore.
Yeah.
It's just not
a, it's weak.
Yeah, but it has to be something that's so extreme for that to work.
And in fact, I wasn't trying it on the other comics. It was just, it literally, something that popped into my head as I said it, and it got a big laugh. I thought, oh, I'll try that downstairs. And it was like, oh,
is this in Brighton again?
Yeah.
This is, yeah, maybe it's
is it the sensibility? I don't want to, you know, cast aspersions, right? But, you know, is there a sort of a, maybe a sensitivity surrounding gigs in Brighton that
they,
maybe...
They were not upset. I didn't lose them at all. I think it was just, maybe they're just so that... nice that it doesn't even occur to them.
No,
you know?
I think they just didn't, they can't have got it. Because there's, with that joke, you either laugh or you go, ooh.
Yeah.
You, there's no in between. You can't say that you're a Nazi in a joke with to no reaction unless there's some feeling from that. So they just didn't get it.
And
I
it's not a sustained thing. It's not like I'm frequently doing jokes about that. It was just literally my mind finding a joke as I spoke and just saying it. And it was like, and it wasn't something.
So you tried it on
comics
either? Did you try it on the comics beforehand?
Well, as I said, I didn't even try it. I literally said it conversationally as a joke as I spoke.
Have you ever had a?
And that got a big laugh. And then when I tried it in front of the actual punters, it's not the sort of thing that I would include in a set because when I really think about it, I'm referring to some pretty grim stuff that I don't really need to go there with.
No. Have you ever had a comic try a joke out on you? So I've had this. They try a joke out on you before and you have to go yes or no to whether they try it.
Oh, yeah.
I've done that. I've said, yeah, that's really good. They've tried it. It hasn't worked. And then they've gone, Mark Simmons told me to do that.
Oh, no.
Like
so
that.
They blame you.
Yeah, and then I had to come on. So instantly, the audience think you don't know what you're talking
about.
You've
got the baggage of their shit joke.
Yeah, was that Mark?
I can't even remember.
Stick them on the blacklist.
I wrote this joke that is my closer at the moment. All this time on, because it got locked away for a while, now it's back. I told a mate of mine this joke idea. He said it was rubbish. And the next night, I'm telling it to another mate in the pub. We're up at the bar, and the mate I told it to the previous day overheard it and cracked up laughing. Because obviously I've told it in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
But the humour has come through.
And that's my current closing joke.
Well, I don't know. It was like the exact same joke.
Depends what mind
obviously
frame
I've phrased
in.
It slightly. Yeah, I don't.
I've never heard anyone. You say that I'm not in the right frame of mind. I've never heard anyone say mind frame before.
Well, it's kind of a sci-fi sounding term. Is it mind frame?
It's mind frame.
Welcome
not a thing.
To the mind frame.
Yeah, I'm not in the right mind frame for that.
It's a real word.
I was just thinking, frame of mind. Mind frame.
You're right. But it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I just hadn't.
It does sound matrixy, doesn't it?
Mind. Welcome to the mind frame. Yeah. Sounds like an 80s.
Mind frame for this.
A bit like, some sort
when
of...
You do say it.
Some sort of game show.
So, but that was what I was going to say as well, about jokes that, like, you know the joke that people always do, the one, oh, so-and-so's let himself go.
Yeah.
And they refer to a celebrity. It's a very... Yeah. And I've always avoided those.
So we just explain what that is. So a lookalike. Yeah. So it's like a... It's basically what a lot of comics are told to do for their set, for their opening joke, when they go on a course or anything, because it's an easy in. Because, one, if you do look like someone, the audience is thinking it. You need to tell them that you know they're thinking it, because then they can stop thinking it.
Yeah.
So for me, I've never done one, because my mate who I started comedy with, Stuart, he basically said to me, don't do that, everyone does that. It's a bit hack. So because it would be some sort of Ed Sheeran's, done something, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the let yourself go is the classic.
It's a classic. Yeah. So it's like 28 years old, and I got off the bus. It's one of those.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know a note on that? So and so's let himself go. You know, that's what Stuart Lee's been doing recently. Coming on stage and going, I know what you're thinking. Stuart Lee's let himself go.
Oh, that's good.
Well, that was my joke actually. I did.
God damn it, Stuart Lee.
I was coming on going, I know what you're thinking, Stuart Lee's let himself go. No, I would come on and say, hey everyone, my name's Dan Fardell. I know what you're thinking, Dan Fardell's let himself go.
Yeah.
And that would get a laugh from comics, but the audience
of
didn't
course.
Really know what it was about.
But that's the thing, Stuart, even though Stuart Lee obviously is very well known Are his audience so in tune with comedy that they yeah. just know that thing?
They're much more comedy savvy than the average audience wow. that I was dealing with, I think. But also, in tune with the fact that he gets meta about comedy.
Right. I think. Yes. Can I just add something here that I've noticed on the tour? I've got a joke. I won't do the joke because it's on the tour. But there's a joke where I've done it in the clubs for years. And I had to say my name in the punchline.
Yeah.
And then there's another tiny bit. It always hit and miss. Since the tour, it works every time.
Because they know
they
you.
They know who I am.
So
when you do the club and I say Mark Simmons something, they're going, who's this Mark Simmons? Isn't that mad? Yeah. So the joke works every time now.
Which one is that?
I'll tell you after. Because I just don't want to give anything away.
No. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, I'm giving away all my best lines on here.
That's all right.
It's fine. No one cares.
No one listens to this.
I recently had...
We don't put it out. I just like to hang out with people.
If this is a big elaborate ruse, just so...
I've recently had my first proper haircut for a long time. For 20 years, I've just been using clippers doing my own hair. Mm. A decade ago, when I did my first boom, I went and got a haircut. It was like a special treat because I was so excited. But then a few weeks ago...
Comic Boom, which is a comedy night that runs in Brighton.
It's a nice comedy night, a comedian in Brighton. Basically, I'd been letting my hair and beard really grow out. And it was part of my set because my ex-girlfriend used to be very much... As soon as my hair got to about an inch long, she would be like... Or even half an inch, she'd be like, oh, get the clippers out, sort it out.
Yeah.
Really, and the joke was that I used to obey, but I didn't quite know what it was about. But judging by what she's been up to since we broke up... I now realise she was trying to keep me looking like a lesbian, right? Because she's got a girlfriend now and stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's all cool. But she... but basically, I was explaining why I had this really wild, long, unkempt hair.
Yeah.
And then I would say, I have seen this. I've owned a mirror. I know what this looks like. I said, I do know... And this is one of those jokes I would normally avoid, but it was working so well. I do know that at this point, I kind of look like Tom Hanks in Castaway if he'd eaten the volleyball. And that was working for me. And then basically I work with adults with learning disabilities, and I literally got like bullied by three guys I work with, two women and a bloke, who were just like nagging me to sort my hair out. And then like the guy actually got a sick burning on me and I had to go and do it. And he said, I don't know if I should call you Danny or Santa. So that day I made an appointment and got my hair cut. But that joke, I was still using it and explaining I'd had my hair cut. And I added the line, now I realise I kind of look like Olivier Giroud if he'd eaten the volleyball. And that was working at first, but it's like it's so long now since the haircut.
Who's Olivier? Giroud. I don't know either.
He's a French footballer. He was at Arsenal and then Chelsea, and now he's at AC Milan.
Why would he have eaten the volleyball?
Well, that's the joke. It was like a callback to the Tom Hanks.
Sorry,
Hanks
sorry,
the
I thought you were saying instead.
Oh no, I would say that the Tom Hanks joke. I'd say that I used to have this joke and it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
But
oh, that's nice.
But yeah, but then it's like...
I think that's good. Does that work?
It still works, but I feel a bit... Those jokes work when you can see the thing in front of you.
Maybe people don't know who that is.
Well, I did.
Well, the Olivier Giroud thing doesn't work as well. That's the thing. But I can still... Tom Hanks thing still works.
Is there anyone...
I know he is.
Is there anyone that you could use footballer?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. Who do I look like? Insulting answers.
So they've got to have a beard.
Yeah. Well, I've got a beard, yeah, so it helps. There you go. See, Olivier Giroud was the closest I could get.
Oh, I need to see a picture of Olivier
Giroud
now.
With the sort of quiffy hair thing going on.
Okay, cool.
But I sort of segued into that because before I got the haircut and before I came up with the Tom Hanks gag, I thought, well, I'm going to have to refer to this because this is looking more outlandish.
Hmm.
And I came up with one. I know what you're thinking. Zeus has let himself go. And I thought...
Zeus,
you know, the Greek
Zeus.
God.
Because
I thought that the classical... reference sort of elevated it beyond the mundane.
Mm.
It wasn't like Jamie Oliver's let himself go or something. It was like a proper... And there was something cheeky about using a classical reference in a real hack joke format. But then that bloody new Thor movie came out with Russell Crowe as a dilapidated Zeus. I had to stop. And that was when I came up with the Tom Hanks one.
Yeah.
So.
But why all these people keep nicking your ideas?
I know, yeah. Marvel Studios have basically got rich off my joke writing.
I know.
But you said there was one more you wanted to hear from me, and I can tell you it's a really convoluted one. And it's not that convoluted, but there's so many reasons why it didn't work. So many chinks in the armor, basically. I was with friends at the Duke of York Cinema in Brighton, which is a historical, longest running cinema over a century. and we saw a preview of the Steve Coogan film, The Look of Love, where he played Paul Raymond, the like 70s porno baron and Soho landlord. And afterwards, we saw him walking down the street. And we know that famously, he's very like misanthropic. Like, he doesn't like people chatting to him. Like, he's one of the people who's least warm to his fans. So I said as a joke, oh, I bet he'd love it if I went up to him and went, aha! Like, which, of course, is the Alan Partridge catchphrase. And it was just silly because we know how inappropriate that would be socially, how much he'd hate it. So I came up with a joke based on that. I've just moved to Brighton. So I was like, I've recently moved to Brighton from Crawley. Like, it's very exciting, mainly because you see more celebrities. Like, the first week I was here, I saw Steve Coogan walking down the street. And I couldn't resist it. I couldn't resist. Like a child, I ran up to him. I went, aha! And he didn't care for it, I have to say. But the following week, I saw Adele walking down the street. And like a child, I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. I ran up to her and I went, aha! And she didn't mind, actually. It was all right. And the thing about that is it's like you have to know exactly who Steve Coogan is.
Yeah.
Mostly, you kind of have to know that he doesn't like that sort of thing.
Shall I tell you what I think my problem with that is that might be a thing? Adele's not known for a particular thing for someone to shout at them, right? Do you not want someone that everybody... That's the same. That someone that would have the same thing.
So very, like, I saw Victor Meldrew or something.
Yes.
And I went, aha.
Yes, exactly. Because everyone thinks you need them. You really need them to think you're going to go, I don't believe it. And that's also a good one. Because in Father Ted, that was one of the whole bits about...
Yeah,
Father Ted going up to him and shouting.
Well, he famously hates people doing that.
So that's an even better thing to use.
Well, actually, there might be something there. Like,
I think so.
Because I started explaining who Steve Coogan was as well.
No,
he's not. I heard recently of him complaining. Maybe I missed out.
What's he called?
Not Victor Meldrew.
What's his real name?
Wilson. Is it Richard something?
Richard Wilson.
Richard Wilson.
Is it Richard Wilson? Alexa, how old's Richard Wilson?
Richard Wilson is 86 years old.
He's still going.
Okay.
Alexa, stop.
What's the new notification? What have you bought, Danny?
What have you bought? A first aid manual. And you can't blame me for buying a first aid manual. Because you might take a turn and I'm...
Yeah.
Is it called The Secrets of the Female Body?
And also, I'd think, can we think of a modern... Because there will be a whole generation that won't know who Victor Meldrew is.
Yeah, or Steve Coogan even. I mean,
and would you
say
Victor Meldrew? You'd have to say Victor Meldrew, I think.
Well, you could say
Richard
Wilson, who plays Victor Meldrew, maybe.
I think so.
But it's all getting a bit exposition-y.
Is there a recent person that has something? Could
it
be like Peter Kay and garlic bread? But it's not quite. Peter Kay's got too many of those. You need someone who's got one thing.
Because catchphrase comedy isn't really the same as it was, is it? Like.
And people
should have a catchphrase, shouldn't they? We should all have a catchphrase. It's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Is that good content?
That is mine a bit, but was that, yeah, there we go. <That's>,
well, like Harry Hill has got like, what are the chances of that happening? Yeah. And
I've never read that.
Well, that is quite an old Harry Hill
reference.
I'm very old.
Dated.
Yeah. That's the trouble, is that I remember like about doing a joke about the Spice Girls, funnily enough, not about the Spice Girls, but when I was doing like a university gig, one of those freshers weeks. You could say, you can make a reference to the Spice Girls thinking it's completely, you know, up to date. They wouldn't know what you're talking about.
No. So actually, let's put that out to the listeners. If you got an example of a modern day, example of that everyone would know, let us know.
I referred fairly recently to that. Oh, you know, like Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark, grabbing the hat under the door as it kind of... Youngster just looked at me and I'm like, I'm talking about a 40-year-old film here.
My shark joke, because that's one of my first jokes and I've brought it back in my show. Because it's one of my favourites. It doesn't hit as well anymore because I think Jaws is an old reference now. That's the joke where I say my little baby pet shark said his first word. He said, da, da.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
But I think youngsters, again, don't really know that.
Yeah,
these
references, man.
Yeah.
Gilbert Gottfried, who probably is another thing people won't have heard of, he was a brilliant, real sort of out there US comedian.
Mm.
And he leaned into that heavily. He started doing like Humphrey Bogart and James Mason impressions at college gigs and stuff. Yeah. Just to be like, F you, I'm doing the stuff that makes me laugh. And I'm making fun of film stars who've been dead for 30 years, long before you were born, and that's just what I'm going to do. You know.
And did he have an angle with that, or would he just die?
He'd often die, but because he had so much, you know, he had so much sort of goodwill from the early days, and I would often smash gigs, like when people sought him out. But also, what he would do is he did that kind of anti-comedy repetition thing.
Yeah.
He would say something so many times that people who were annoyed with him didn't like him from the start, because he had that real sort of screechy voice as well. Mm. By the end of it, they would be in hysterics hearing the same line for the 30th time.
Right, yeah,
Because he just committed so heavily to it. And that was kind of how he worked. But the price of getting responses like that was that fairly frequently he would completely die. Well, there's one story of him literally, an outdoor gig, literally backing off the stage through a giant hedge and cutting himself to ribbons just to get off the stage. Right?
Have you two ever had any situations where you've liked that? Because basically on one of the first podcasts, Sean Walsh told a story about when he was new, whenever he'd die at a gig, he'd just do his thing where he'd slowly walk further away from the audience. Like, he naturally would just back away. And he said this one time he backed into the backdrop fell. The whole backdrop dropped down. I think something like just like Mike Gunn and like Ian Stone are just sitting there behind waiting for them to go on. Everyone's just sort of looking at them.
Well, funny you should say Mike Gunn, because there's that famous story about Mike Gunn. He was doing a corporate and he absolutely died on his ass at this corporate. So when he got out, it was like, you know, dressing room in the kitchen sort of thing. So he said, oh, look, is there any way I can leave here that means I don't have to go through the audience? And they went, well, you can go in the, you know, the dumb waiter, you know, the lift.
Yeah, wow.
So we got in that, right?
No.
And it went down. And then when the doors opened, all the audience, they'd left the lift standing there. So we had to climb out this dumb waiter and then walk past
that
the audience.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that's where you were going. That's the...
I've never heard that.
You never heard that one?
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it'd be...
That's so
I'm
funny.
Probably not even doing it justice, you know, but that's one of those sort of folklore.
It's like a fast movie isn't it?
I've been in a gig once where I was driving away. It went that badly.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I was stitched up, because what it was is it was a gig where I was supporting Bobby Davro, right?
Humble brag.
And but Bobby Davro didn't want to go on. He wanted to go on first and leave, right?
Right.
So they'd all come to see Bobby Davro.
Yeah.
Not, but I had to go.
So he was opening for you.
Yeah. So I played to the. They were like, what's this bloke doing?
Yeah.
We've seen Bobby Davro now. So I played to signs for 20 minutes. But so this gig went so badly that I'd driven out of the car park.
Yeah.
Before the MC had closed the show.
Really?
Yeah. Because like the doors were open, I could hear it on the PA.
Brilliant. That's so funny.
Yeah. I've got you. I could tell you something now, but you probably have to cut it out because it's someone else's story to tell. But it's a brilliant...
Yeah.
I just did it with Mike Gunn.
Who is it? And then you can ask him if it's all right. And if
okay,
not.
I'll ask him. It's Graham Collard.
I love Graham, yeah.
It's a brilliant story. He went to do the open mic at the Comedy Store and he's just walking on stage. He sits to 5 minutes on his watch and he goes on, doesn't last very long, feels very embarrassed, gets straight out of there.
It's the gong show.
It's the gong show, sorry, yeah. He doesn't last very long, gets out of there, straight down, straight onto the tube. He's on the tube train. And the five-minute buzzer goes off on his phone. Yeah. He's already on the tube train. I've done a couple of like gong shows, and both times I've done them, I've been the reason the MC went on stage and berated the audience and said, what do you expect at a gong show? And then the next six acts have sailed through because I was like the barometer of like harshness of the audience. Yeah. So I've kind of like, I've been put off them heavily.
I've never done them. What were you going to say about Shrewsbury?
Oh, older shot, actually. It was a similar sort of situation where my watch vibrated, which meant my time was up and I was a good 20 minutes down the road.
Right, yeah.
Right, I mean, that's...
On that note.
Yeah, that's what a great episode. Thanks very much for tuning in, everybody. Any feedback, let us know at Jokes with Mark across all social media. Let us know if you've got an example of a catchphrase that everyone would know up to date today. Let us know and we'll report back on those next time. Before Christmas, we've only got 6 shows left, and by the time this goes out, probably even less. Dublin show, the early show. There's still a few tickets left for that. And then we're adding loads next year. So if you'd like to come see the show, Quip Off The Mark, do check it out at Jokes With Mark on social media and marksimmons.co.uk on that's my website.
Yeah, the internet.
That damn internet. Thank you very much, Dan Fardell, for coming
Cheers.
In.
Thank you.
To Thanks the studio. First official comedian guest in the studio. And anything...
Don't tell Joey Page that.
Has Joey Page been in the studio?
Yeah, he sat there, but we didn't film it.
We didn't film it. Okay, there we go. So it's not official. Yeah. Anything more from you, Danny?
I don't know. Is that good content? Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
That's my catchphrase. Nothing more from me, Danny. Hashtag awoga, everybody.
That's your other catchphrase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.